This is Sean Slusser. Today is November 19th, 2016. And I am conducting an oral history with Deborah McCoy, correct? For Fresno State's Valley Public History Initiative, Preserving Our Stories. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Yes, my name is Deborah McCoy, and I am the owner of McCoy Hip Hop here in Fresno, California.
Okay, great. I think it's always good to start just kind of with a general background, kind of your family background, kind of what was your history before you got into dance?
Yes, my family background history is that I was raised in foster care for 7 years, separated from my brothers. I am the only girl. I have 6 brothers. And at the age of about 12, we got out of foster care and went back home to my dad. We were excited and happy to be together as a family, and we tried everything that we could to stay together as a family. We got involved in activities such as dancing, acting, and my dad couldn't afford to put us in a performing arts school or anything like that. So everything we started on our front porch. Wow. And the community kids saw us and was interested in what we were doing. So our house was the community house. Wow. Where all of the kids came, and our passion and our drive to be successful radiated through the whole community.
So where is this?
Where is?
Like the where you lived?
We lived over by Roosevelt High School.
Okay.
We were over by Roosevelt High School, and we were also in Kiowa.
Oh, wow.
In Kiowa.
So how far is that?
Kiowa is probably about, probably about 8 miles from the center of Fresno or so. It's in Fresno, but it is a community that is in need of enrichment, the same as the one by Roosevelt. So we stood out, like, you know, we stood out. We were different. It was something that was for us. We had to do. We had to be different.
Right.
We had to be different. And I think it all came from my father.
Okay.
And it was as young people, you never admire your parents. You always look at your parents like, don't do it. Sit down. Don't do it. And my dad was a singer. He was a self-taught musician.
Wow.
And dad would go to the prisons and sing for prisoners. He would take us with him, and he would always say, look what daddy's doing. And, you know, you just never as a child see the value in that.
Right.
And as we got older and we started looking at, we grew up in foster care. Where did we get this drive from? Where did we get this attitude, our whole being, where did we get it from? And we're like, oh my goodness, it's from dad.
Yeah.
It is from dad, you know? So I wish he was here now so that we could tell him thanks, you know, for what you gave us. We never saw it then.
Wow.
Never saw it then.
Do you know when your family came to Fresno?
My dad migrated to Fresno from Texarkana, Texas.
Oh, wow.
Because there was no work there. California was the place to go. So my dad had to be, at that time, he was born in 1922. So my dad, I believe, was in his early 20s when he came to Fresno. And he came here to work. My dad was a hard, very, very hard worker. And again, not only the dance and performing did we get from dad, but his whole attitude towards success. My dad didn't have anything.
Yeah.
Anything. But he never had a negative attitude. He never said anyone tried to keep him down. He said, it's out there, go get it.
Right.
So he came to California at an early age.
Okay. What kind of work did he do out here?
He was a truck driver. Actually, when my dad came, he was into construction. He was part of, he helped build the dams. He did a lot of farming here. My dad was just very involved in different types of things, but farming, construction.
Wow.
Yes.
Interesting. Can you tell me a little bit about like what Fresno was like growing up?
Fresno was very interesting. when I told you I was in foster care for 7 years, I wasn't raised in the city.
Okay.
I was raised in the country.
Oh, wow.
And I saw very few black people.
Okay.
I lived out near Carruthers, and I went to a school called American Union School in the country. And in that entire school, from kindergarten through eighth grade, I was able to stay in the same foster home during that duration. So it was home. That school was home to me, but there were, in that whole school, very few black families. So I wasn't, you know. But anyway, when we moved to the city, when we came back home to Dad, we were turned on to a whole different world. A different world. We had to learn how to communicate differently, act differently, because we were in the city. We were dealing with these urban kids, so we had to get that urban attitude. And so it was great. It was very, it was great to be able to go from there to here, to be able to experience that transition, to know when to turn it on and turn it off. We had to know how to fit in.
Right.
So it was great for us. It was it difficult? No. We just had to be willing to fit in. As a child, you want to be cool. You want to be cool.
Right.
I talk differently, so I had to learn how to change my, I guess you would say, my dialect, how I spoke, because I spoke differently. I would always be teased about the way I talked until...
Like it was country?
No. Kids would tell me, you talk white.
Okay.
I was told that, and I'm like, what is... I didn't understand. I didn't understand what that was.
Right.
And when I went to school, the teachers would tell the kids, you should speak like her, talk clearly like her, do like her. And it sort of put me on blast.
Yeah.
I was sort of ashamed at first, but then I realized where the teachers were coming from. You know, they made me the speaker. I was the guest speaker for this. I was a spokesperson for this. And every single day at my high school, I did the daily bulletin. They called me out of my class, and I would read the daily bulletin of everything that was going on at the school, whether it was sports, academics, you know, whatever was going on. So that, for me, finally gave me the confidence, because kids will beat you down. If you're different, you're, you know. But when my teachers told me and reinforced who I was like, okay, this is cool. This is cool. But I knew when to turn it off.
Right. What school is that?
I went to, when we first got home to my dad, we went to Sequoia.
Okay.
And then from Sequoia, we went to a school called Irwin.
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 Okay.
Which is now called Computech.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Irwin was the junior high school to Edison High School, and they were side by side. So, yeah.
Was there like a specialty for that?
A specialty for the school?
Yeah.
Not at the time, no.
Okay.
It was on the west side, and at that time, that was before it was before the integration started. What happened at that school on that side of town, it was black.
Wow.
All black and Hispanic, but majority black. That's where all the black kids went. All the black kids went to Irwin. All the black kids went to Edison. And when I say all, I don't literally mean all of them in Fresno. But every
majority.
It was like every black person knew every black person. You didn't, everybody knew everybody. You know, that was our community. You know, and we loved it. It was really cool that, you know, it was just surrounded by blacks. That was the community. So you go from Irwin and then you go to Edison. And then when I went to Edison, that's when they started the integration of kids coming from the north to the south south to be able to mix. And I was a part of that community, not the community, but the committee at my high school.
Hmm.
And we would come over to the north schools and meet, and then we started busing.
Right.
We had started busing kids from the west side over on this side of town, and from this side over there, started integrating and mixing. So that was really awesome. I mean, it was welcomed more than anyone would ever think.
What was your role in the committee?
I was part of the committee to go and meet the other students, to direct what would happen when we went over to the other schools. It was a great responsibility for me.
Yeah.
I was a spokesperson, you know. I was a spokesperson.
Did you participate? Did you go? I mean.
Oh yes. Oh yes. 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 We went over to the other schools, and because we were on the committee. Pardon me.
Did you like take classes there?
No. No. Okay. We just were looking at the environment, seeing how things work there, mixing and mingling. But that was not uncommon to me.
Okay.
I had already been there.
I mean,
it was like, oh. You know, it was nothing to me. I wasn't seeing anything new.
Right.
Because I had already been subjected to other cultures, other races already. So it was a wonderful, I think, doing that, because sometimes we don't get out of our community. We're stuck right here. We never get out. We never see anything else. So this is all we think. This is all we think it is.
Right.
You know?
Real quickly, the transition from the kind of countryside into the city, was it that stark, where like Fresno was considered pretty urban?
Yes, it was. Okay. It was so different. When I went as a foster child, when we would come from the country into the city, I was so shocked to see a house next to a store. I'm like, what? Or a church right there. And it was just, for me, wow, what is this? How cool is this? Yeah. Because in the country, you're this little ant, and there's all this open land,
right.
You know, forever, going on forever, streets that went on forever, you know,
right.
And the abundance of people on the streets. I thought I was in New York when I came to in the city. I thought, this is it, you know, this is it.
That's interesting.
Yes.
So maybe, can you tell me a little bit about what the African-American community was like when you got here? Like, what did that community look like? What were some of the main
It was a cool community. I was shocked at, it was a shock for me. It was an eye-opener because I thought I was black.
Right.
I mean, you know, I thought I was black, but then I didn't. That never occurs to you.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me that I'm black or I'm different. I knew I was different because when I went to school, like I said, I would look at the other kids. It was majority Caucasian and Portuguese and Hispanic. I did know I was different, but no one ever treated me differently. They all treated me the same. But then when I came into town and I was around subjected to more black people, I was like, wow. It was like a wow moment for me. They were different. They were, it was just different. It was different. It was a culture shock of my own, from my own culture.
Right.
You know, it was different. So I changed. I didn't change, but I fit in. I molded myself to be able to fit in, to not stand out. It was awesome.
So what did that mean? Like, what were some of the differences?
Some of the differences, wow. I was very quiet.
Okay.
But, like, anybody could be very quiet.
Right,
I mean,
right.
There were differences. But as a child, you notice everything. I was a very quiet person. I wasn't aggressive. Mm. I guess I would be what you call a pushover.
Okay.
I mean, I felt every bit of emotion, but I would never act on it. But when I came into the city, it just wasn't blacks that I saw differently. I saw Hispanics differently. I saw them all differently because when you're in a school like Sequoia, that was at that time, that kind of school, there were riots going on.
Wow.
So it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter what color you are to be different. My dad never taught us that.
Okay.
My dad never told us that because you're this, this is how your world is going to be. No, my dad didn't look at the world like that. So we didn't. I just realized that people are different. It doesn't matter what color you are or what, no. And it also depends on what you're subjected to.
Okay.
So the kids that I was subjected to were what would you consider hood kids.
Yeah.
So hood could be, it doesn't matter what color you are. Everybody got hood in them.
Right.
You know, everybody does. Everybody does. So those kids were like, hood. I mean, you're like, wow. They would do things that I would be like, wow. They were bold. They were hood.
Yeah.
Whatever you would put under the word hood, that's exactly what those kids were.
Okay.
But I was different. I was different.
Right.
I knew better. I knew the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah.
You know? And I in foster care, I had my foster mother had a strong hand. So we got our butts whipped. We knew better.
Right.
You know? And again, it depends on the person. Some kids can get your butt whipped and you're still going to be bad. And I had a baby brother like that.
Okay.
Baby brother, he knew we would get whippings, but my baby brother would do it anyway.
Wow.
He would do it anyway. So when I speak of hood, culture, whatever, that can be anybody. It just doesn't signify any specific race. A hood is how you're living.
Right.
You know, it's not who you are, but it's basically how you live and how you think. you know, and every one of us have hood in us.
Right.
Every one of us. So.
So were there like specific places within the community or that you remember kind of going to using?
Yes. Calwa to me was okay. One of the.
How do you spell it?
It's C-A-L-W-A.
Okay.
It, and I say Calwa because that was the first place that I remember with the community kids. My father would get out in the yard with us and play baseball, football, run track. And those kids with hungry, with nothing to eat, sometimes not their whole family unit, would all come to us and play with us and run out there. My dad would relate to these kids like they were his. And all the kids wanted to go to Mr. McCoy's house, you know? So Calwa to me sticks out very, I mean, and another thing about my life as a child was when I was in foster care, my mother, my foster mom, would buy an abundance of food. So going to the store was like a monumental moment. it just wouldn't happen. When I went back home to my father, we wouldn't have food sometime.
Yeah.
So we would go to the store that morning, walk to the store to buy the food that we're eating that morning.
Right,
that was
right.
Like, to me, it was like the poorest things or the most hoodest things to me was like going to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Because it was so far-fetched from where I came from, and foster care was so different.
Yeah.
So different. So different. But those places were places to me that, especially Calwa, just so stood out to me.
Yeah.
And there was a center on the west side. When we moved to the west side,
okay.
It was called the Umoja Center.
Umoja.
It was U-M-O-J-O. I think it's called Umoja Center. I believe that's what it was called. It was on the west side. And there was a guy there. His name was Mark Teamer.
Okay.
And at that center, we would do cultural things. We learned about our culture, and you know, as a kid, you don't want to hear nothing like that. You just want to just do other things. But he gave us a wake up call on our culture and sparked an interest in us regarding our culture, whatever
yeah.
our culture is.
Yeah.
You know, he showed us and he taught us. And at that center, we were able to communicate with other kids in the community. It was like a safe place for us when we lived on the west side. We all looked forward to going to the Umoja Center.
Yeah.
You know, it was awesome. It was
so really when you cool. say culture, like what kind of things are that?
Our music,
okay.
Our dance, those type, our food. You know, the way we dressed as you know, African Americans, we were
yeah.
different. We were, we could dress.
Right.
You know, we just have this thing that, putting things together, the way you dress, how you dress, how you feel when you put those clothes on.
Yeah.
You may be broke as all get out and starving and haven't eaten for a while, but you sharp as all get out.
Right.
You know, you look good, you know.
So are these, like, when you say they're doing, like, cultural activities, are these, like, content, like from the moment, or are they, like, historical?
It was historical, yeah,
okay.
And from the moment. But historical, that's the most I got out of it was the historical
okay.
things, because we were never taught that.
Yeah.
We were never, that was never taught. You don't
so
know.
So would that be, like, African-American history, or were they trying
it
to
It was African-American
and,
history, yeah.
Okay.
African-American history. It was awesome, because we didn't know.
Yeah.
We didn't know. You know, if you're never subjected to that, and it's your culture,
right.
You're not subjected to what happened a long time ago. Where did this come from, and how did this come
yeah.
about? You're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, you're like, really? You never think about that. You
right.
don't want to know. As a kid, who wants to learn history? I didn't. I
True.
Cared less about history.
Right.
But when you have someone in the community that is telling you and dropping these things in your ear
right.
about your history, it's not only just for you to listen to what that person is telling you, just like the Bible.
Right.
When a preacher preaches, you better go to that Bible and
right.
reference everything yourself.
Right.
So that was thrown at us, and so, okay, let me go check this out. Let me see about this from somewhere else, you know?
Were you getting any of that in school?
No. Okay. Oh, well, when I went to elementary school, No. You would see the word Negro. This was so funny. I have to tell you this story about that. I'm glad you asked me that. So I told you I was at basically an all-white school. And I was black, of course. I did realize that. But there was a word that I was so embarrassed about, and it was the word Negro.
Okay.
Okay, because in the 60s, that's what it, you know, that's what you considered a Negro. So in class, I would read ahead to see if I saw that word so that I could put my armor on before we got there. Because when they said the word Negro, everybody sort of cut and did that side eye at me. I was like, oh, Lord. But, you know, that's the memory that, like I said, I would read ahead real quick. Right, so if I saw that word Negro in there. But you weren't taught, from the history books, you weren't taught really that kind of the history of what the positive things that were done. You were just talking about slavery. It was the bad stuff that you didn't want to hear about. Right. And yeah, Negro slaves, or you know, that was what it was, you know.
Okay. So maybe let's transition a little bit and talk about how you got into dance and what that story was like.
Okay. Back in the day, there was this show on TV that while I was still in foster care, Ed Sullivan, there was a show that came on in Fresno. It was there was a guy called Al Radka,
okay.
R-A-D-K-A, and he had a show called The Al Radka Show, and he had community talents come on and perform. Well, in foster care, my foster sister was, she was a pageant, contestant, queen. She would enter beauty pageants. She was very talented. She could sing. She was pretty. Anyway, she got us together, and we did, she taught us this performance. It was Aretha Franklin, Chain of Fools, the song she did. And what my foster sister did, she got the construction paper and she made chains, and those chains. And she had us all chained, and we were singing and dancing. And in the song it says, one of these mornings that chain is gonna break, and we broke the chains. And it was that TV show. So, but a sad thing happened for me regarding that TV show is that I was on a punishment. So the day for us to go do the filming, I didn't get to go because I was on a punishment for something that I did out of my control. So it broke my heart.
Wow.
So I had to watch my foster brothers and sisters on TV. You know, they got to go, but I didn't get to go. But anyway, that was the sparkle that was put in my heart and in my eyes. And so when we got back home with my dad, we got into martial arts. We studied martial arts for many, many years. We all got our black belts in two different styles of karate. We first studied Shotokan, and then after we got our black belts in Shotokan, we switched over to Taekwondo.
Okay.
And during that time, also, we were dancing. And it was my brother Ken that got us involved heavily into the dancing. My brother Ken, and this is him on this picture here, he was so different. And we never called him by his name, Ken. We called him Maine. That was his name. Because he was so young and he was so, he had stars in his eyes. We were shocked by him.
Yeah.
And he was younger than me. He was younger than us. And we're like, where is this star coming from? Where is this star? This kid, all of us that had our butts whipped with extension cords, and where does this come from? He was a light that was unbelievable. So he started a dance team. He had a group called Soul Patrol, and he had a group called the Minutemen. It was, I can never tell you, when I saw my brother dance, I thought he was Michael Jackson.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Then we were in junior high school. Then there was a talent show at the school. My brother got up on that stage. He had his group dancing. The lights were flickering on and off. He was the audience. I'm like, no, what is this? Everybody in that auditorium was screaming and hollering. And I said, this is it. This is it right here. So I started dancing with my brother.
So what time period are we talking about?
This had to be, I graduated from high school in 1979. I graduated Edison High School, top of my class.
Okay.
In 79. So that had to be 79. So that had to be 75, 76, 74, 75, 76, okay. During that time. I cannot tell you. When I saw my brother, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
How do you go from hood to this? How do you do it? How do you do it? It was just, it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
So we started dancing together. We started dancing together. We went, we danced at school. People were shocked with us, shocked. We started dancing at churches. People were calling us. We were dancing. I remember we danced at an Armenian church. They called us at a church.
Wow.
That's when we were put on the record. We were like, okay, back in the day, dance and church did not mix.
Right.
I don't care who you were. Did not mix. You going straight to hell. But you going straight there. Doors open. Go. They were calling us to perform at churches for events.
Wow.
We performed at the Fresno Fair. We won the talent search contest. We were able to perform with Freddie Fender.
Okay.
Every contest that my brother and I entered, we won. Okay. Every single one. We went up and down. My dad would take us up and down California to compete in dance contests. We'd win every single one. Hmm. Before we were 18 years old, we were dancing in clubs. No one would ever ask us how old we were. We'd go into the contest in the clubs.
Yeah.
Rainbow Ballroom. There was a place here called Bogies, Piccadilly Inn, Lucy's. We won every competition we got into. When we walked in there, everybody goes, oh, dang, here are the McCoys. They're like, oh, dang, they are here. But we had what was in our blood. You can't teach somebody what we had. And we didn't realize it. It all came from my dad. The things that we couldn't stand about my dad, we all had it, and we all did it. We'd go somewhere. My dad would stand there and talk to somebody for 1 hour, and we're kids, little kids waiting for my dad.
Right.
You know? So my dad had a quality about him that people were attracted to him.
Yeah.
We all have it.
Okay.
We all have it.
So what kind of, how would you define the dances you were doing?
We were pop locking, roboting, mime. We were very different. We were, I have a stepmother, and we never say stepmother, but she's my mom.
Right.
She would make all of our costumes. We would go to the thrift stores and buy material, and she was a seamstress, so she would sew all of our clothes. She would make our things. We were original. Right. We were different. This was another one of our outfits. This is my baby brother, Bobby.
Okay.
And this is my brother, Ken, and myself.
Wow.
And this was... Also, we had a group called the Puppets also, where Ken and I, but we were pulled out of class.
Wow.
We were performing all over. We would go all out of town. We were all straight A students, so we were able to be pulled out of school. We were performing up and down the state at different events.
Where are you learning, like, those styles?
From the street.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean, where were we learning? On the street. There was no going, are you kidding me? I have to say it like this.
Yeah.
You're black and you're going to go take dance lessons? Come on, dude. It's on the street. It's right there. That's how they were called battles. There was no fighting and all that. You want to fight? Okay, we're dancing. It wasn't that. That was a release for us. It was nothing like it. It was nothing like it. Nothing like it. There was no, you learned by watching other dancers and what they did and what you liked. And my brother Ken was like no other, no other. The way he would hit, the way he would control his body, the way he would move. How can you be inspired by your own brother? To me, no one was above. Where did you get that?
Right.
And then his wife. This is another interesting story is that I danced with Ken. And then Ken met his wife, which was his girlfriend at the time. I'm going to tell you this. She could dance Janet Jackson better than Janet Jackson could dance herself. Again, like I told you, we would shut down every club, everywhere. My sister-in-law was to die for.
Okay.
She looked like Janet Jackson. She danced better than Janet Jackson. You'll never believe it.
Okay.
She was to die for. People were calling us left and right. We were hardly in school because we were performing here, performing there. We were dancers. So once she came in the picture, then I sort of like, okay, because that was my brother's girlfriend. Then
right.
I sort of backed off
yeah.
and let her and him take this on and, you know, do more the performing together because it was, you know, they were together and that was respect out
yeah.
for her
yeah.
because she was so good, so good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and so all of that really inspired me. So we started teaching dance on our front porch.
Wow.
Started teaching dance on our front porch. And again, community kids would come and learn dance, learn karate. Here we are having our own karate school and own dance company on our front porch.
Where did you learn the karate from?
My brother, my older brother. He went to Japan and studied and then, and I don't know how in the world my dad got the money to get my brother over there. I have no clue how that happened because we were poor as all get out.
Yeah.
We were living, we had nothing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that happened, but that was a mystery. But anyway, my brother trained, and then he trained here also, Way of Japan. It's like once someone knows you do something, you form a community,
right.
and everybody that does this, you know, sort of, you know, gets together and learn and train. And so my brother was our instructor. Again, we skyrocketed there too.
Yeah.
We won. I mean, we did weapons. We did everything. We came from nothing to get to where everything that we did, we were successful.
Wow.
We were I was like the baddest girl ever. I could jump over your head. I was the toughest girl,
yeah.
the strongest girl ever. My first karate tournament, I broke a girl's ribs.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we were at Frank H. Ball here in Fresno. And I felt bad afterwards, but, you know, I was a tough girl.
Yeah.
And I wanted so much to be like my brothers. I
yeah.
wanted, the only girl with six brothers, I wanted to be cool
yeah.
like them. I wanted to fit in. I didn't want to be that girl where the brothers say go.
Right.
So I was bad. I was better than
hey.
They were.
Right.
You know, I did my thing.
Okay.
You know.
Other than your brother, do you remember other kind of dancers that?
Oh yeah.
Influenced you?
Oh yeah,
Pop
and Pete. All of the
okay.
ones that were all of those guys. We would see them in the community. We would see them, you know, out and about. But we minded our own business. You don't worry about what someone else is doing.
Yeah.
You love who you are, and you grow what you're doing, and don't worry about what someone else is doing. So there was a lot of street dancers. Oh, we knew them all.
So where would you see them?
And on the west side.
Yeah.
Yeah. There would be house parties. There was the Hinton Center here in Fresno that people would go and do their thing. My dad was very strict, so we were kids that really, we couldn't really hang out because
right.
dad wasn't having that. Dad was not having that. What you want to do, your dance, your parties, I will do it for you here at your own house.
Okay.
You're not going to be hanging out on the streets. You're not going to be going to this and that. No, my dad was very, when we came home to daddy, he wasn't just strict on me. He
right.
was strict on his sons too.
Okay.
You're not going to be hanging out. You're not going to be doing this. You're not going to be getting in trouble. You're not
right.
going to do it. Sorry. I'm not going to do it. You want to do it? You want to have a party?
Right.
I will have, my dad would throw us house parties. Community
okay.
would come to our house. My daddy said, now y'all can party all you want because I'm watching you.
Right.
You know, and it was phenomenal. I mean, again, we came from nothing, but our drive for life
yeah.
and enthusiasm for life gave us everything.
Wow. What's taking place at the Hinton Center? Because a couple people have mentioned that.
The Hinton Center, it's like a community. It's a community place where
yeah.
A lot of African Americans go there. It's on the west side,
yeah.
so there's a lot of African American events. A lot of black people go there as a community. You know, so it's a lot of different things going on there. People get married there. There are fashion shows there. I'm also a photographer.
Okay.
So I shoot a lot of events here in mm-hmm. Fresno. So there are a lot of things going on there as far as community. A lot of people throw things there. We danced a lot there. They would have dances, parties. So we would go and we would compete. Competitions. So that was a place where we would all get together.
So were there like popping
competitions? Oh, yeah. There was popping competitions, pop shows.
Is that how they would have been, like, promoted?
Pardon me?
Is that how they would have been advertised? Like,
boy, that's such a long time ago.
General
dance competition.
Okay.
You don't say, like, you wouldn't say there's a popping competition. No, it's dance. When you're in that era or time, it's dance. You don't say it's a popping. No, it's dance. And that's what everybody back in the day, that's what everybody was doing. Everybody was doing the popping, locking, you know, roboting, you know, everybody was doing that. So also, if there were other shows going on, they would have dancers come in, have us come in to perform. So there was a place here in Fresno called the Hacienda.
Okay.
It was Clinton and 99. And it was another place that would have different dance competitions going on. They would do weekly dance competitions. My brother Ken would go and win every single time.
Are these private or they're like sponsored by
the public? They were public, but they were private.
Okay.
It was open for the public, but anyone could go. Okay. It wasn't like, the certain people can go. No, anybody could go. It was open.
The Hinton Center, is that run by the city?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I believe City of Fresno. Yes.
And so the Hacienda would be more just like a private.
Yes, it was a private. It was like not a hotel, but it was like a hotel.
Okay.
It was like people could go. If you came in out of town, you could stay there.
Okay.
You know, and then they would have big events there, big shows there, all types. Yeah, they had a place there where they would do that.
So as this is jumping off, did you guys have a sense of kind of what popping meant in Fresno? Is that something that you saw?
It was life.
To Fresno?
It was life. No. You don't, that's a way of life. It's not history.
Right.
It's you. It's your community. That's, and it's like almost to say no big deal. That's our everyday life. You know, it's an everyday thing.
Yeah.
You know?
So do you have a sense that like popping is unique to Fresno?
No. I don't. I really don't.
Okay.
I don't. There was a lot of talent here, but who studies history like that? Well, where this, you know, no. There was also a group of boys here that came from New York. They were brothers. And they were, I can't remember their last name, but I have family that will remember their last name. And they were, I cannot tell you how good they were, too. I mean, they were different because they came from the East Coast. So we really admired them. And it was a family of brothers that were, I see them occasionally. And those boys, because they were so different too, they could have, if given the right opportunity, those boys would have, you know. But you saw that. You could find that anywhere on the West Side. Or if you're in the community, you could find it anywhere.
Right.
People that would come out of nowhere and you're like, dude, where did you come from? What? I thought I saw it all.
Yeah. So when you started kind of competing against people outside of Fresno, did they recognize that you guys had a different kind of style?
We had showmanship.
Okay.
We had charm. Showmanship. You can be a good dancer all you want, but if you don't have that presence.
Right.
You got to have the presence, and that's what we had. We could dance just like anyone else, but it's that thing that we were born with that was different, that sense of we were likable. If I was dancing in front of you, I would bring you on that stage with me.
Right.
Your mind would be right there.
Right.
You would be right there.
Right.
You know, you would feel it. You would be emotional. We would not, and I think us McCoys, we brought a different side to it. We brought more of the performing arts into that. We weren't just like street. We studied Marcel Marceau.
Okay.
We studied him. And how he moved and his emotions when he danced, we had that. We would make people cry when we danced. Also, we used different types of music.
Okay.
We used the music from The Sting.
Okay.
So we opened it up to different kind of music. And people were like, oh, wow, you could do that to that?
Right.
So we brought in that type of music, you know, that black people weren't, you're not, what?
Right, right.
This is not, and then when we went in there with that Sting music and we were doing that little, our little pantomime thing, and they were like, wow, they're so different, you know? Yeah, we used a lot of classical music and a lot of the brass construction, a lot of that type of music too. A lot of the funk, heavy funk, zap, all of that kind of stuff that we used, and it had a good beat to it. So we went from using that distinct type of music to heavy funk, that right. beat bass. So being versatile and being different. And also what we wore. It was a package. We put the business in. We put the business yeah. into it. And we were never taught. It was something that it was just there. We knew. And we watched shows like, this is funny, again, we watched the Ed Sullivan Show. We watched T-Haw. We watched Benny Hinn. Was it Benny Hinn?
Benny Hill.
Benny Hill, yes. Yeah. Carol Burnett Show. So we would incorporate some of those acts that they would do. We would do acting. We would be on our porch. We would act like old fella on the on our front porch.
Okay. So after RCA, what was the kind of the arc here? Like, what were you doing in terms of the kind of progression over time? Like, so if you're starting off and kind of doing talent shows and kind of around town, what comes after that?
Oh, again, we were doing the competitions, the talent shows. And then people started asking us, will you come to my school? Mm-hmm. We formed a name, and everybody knew who the McCoys were.
Is that did you dance under the McCoys?
Was that under our, we danced under our own name, you know, under our own name, under my name or his name or, you know. So people started asking us to come and teach classes. Mm. So, and that's, we started going to the different schools teaching.
So when was this about?
We started teaching, oh boy, probably in the mid-80s to the 90s, we started going into the schools, training, also to the playgrounds, the different community playgrounds, training and teaching kids how to dance and how to be performers. But we had a different approach to teach them how to behave. Mm. Mannerisms, your manners, couth. You have to behave this certain kind of way. You can't behave like this. We built confidence and self-esteem, because these kids, if you go in there telling a kid, I'm here to build your confidence. They hired me to build your, I'm not gonna listen to you.
Right.
But you put on some music and you get their attention with the beat, you got them.
Right.
You now have an audience.
Right.
You now have an audience, so they're gonna listen to you. So I am very old school.
Okay.
And so I approach my students in an old school fashion kind of way. So once we got into those schools, and then other schools start hearing about us, and other schools start hearing about us, and that grew us so huge. We grew. Then I opened up my own studio.
Okay.
I started my own company. So, so now that's what I do, because, you know, through the community, everybody knew us, and everybody, we were very popular with what we did.
So when you're doing the schools, how are you, like, pitching that, or kind of, in other words, are you portraying that as popping, or is this, we're going to come in and teach?
Hip-hop.
Mm-hmm. When did that transition kind of happen?
That transitioned for me probably about 20 years ago.
Okay.
About 20 years ago. I was a glamour girl. I still am. But I dressed up every day. I was in fashion modeling and things like that. My hair done, makeup and everything. Yeah. But I saw that there was a big market for me to take those high heels off,
right?
You know, take that makeup off my face, and to get bare, to show these kids, to connect with these kids. And it was through dance.
Okay.
I was really big here in modeling. I was a very prominent makeup artist. I've been featured in national and international books as a makeup artist.
Okay.
But I have a lot of different talents. I do a lot of different things.
Sounds like it.
And but there are times when you feel a calling.
Yeah.
You feel something pulling you and saying you are needed here. In our community, watching when parents can no longer discipline their kids the way how we used to be disciplined, the kids are getting buck wild.
Right.
Somebody's got to step in. Mm. Somebody has to recognize that something needs to be done.
Right.
And you have to realize, how do I reach these kids? I can reach these kids through music.
Gotcha.
So, yes, I can reach them through music, and this is what I'm going to do. So I have a dance company, and it is absolutely unbelievable. We perform everywhere, and they're kids. Yeah.
So when did you, like, for your own dancing, like, when did you start calling it hip-hop? That makes sense.
Yeah, but you don't think about that. I don't know. You know, that's a good question. It had to be. It had to be. Probably 90s. Okay, let me go back. It had to be my probably in the early 90s.
Okay.
Probably in the early 90s. Yes, I would say it would go more into a hip hop.
So when you started dancing, if someone asked you like, what kind of dance do you do? How would you define that?
Roboting, pop locking. Okay. When I started, yeah. And we could do the Temptation kind of stuff, those transitions, the movements, and everybody moving at the same time.
Right.
It was a way of life. There was no name to it.
Okay.
That was life. They're putting a name to what you're doing is just, you know, that's sort of weird, you know. But now it's hip-hop, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you okay with that when all the kind of differences kind of get?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I liked the differences. But you always have the things that you like and the things that you don't like,
right,
or the things that you want to do, the things you don't. I never wanted to do the B-boy on the ground spinning on a head. No. And in our community, that was still sort of not, we didn't sort of do that, not really, you know. But as time progressed, then that B-boy thing sort of got good. But still, you don't see a lot of a lot of us doing that. Not really.
So were you? Did you feel like you had a sense of kind of what was coming after you in terms of dance styles? Were you kind of keeping in touch with what was happening?
Always,
locally?
It's your community.
Yeah. Okay.
It's your community. You're always that. You live that. So of course you're. When MC Hammer came out, that was just. Everybody was tuned in.
Yeah.
Oprah, he came on Oprah. I remember that, and it was a Thanksgiving holiday. He came on Oprah. Everybody had their TV on, like back in the day when Kennedy got shot. You know, when people had, everybody was watching the TV.
Right.
It was like that. Everybody. The way he dressed, everybody went and had those pants made. You know, I had those pants made. We had, that was it. It was, when that made a big, watching him dance and how he used to go on across that stage, he wasn't on the ground spinning. He wasn't doing none of that.
Right.
He was standing up, and he was killing it.
Right.
That was it. Everybody doing a hammer. Everybody wearing hammer pants. Everybody getting that flat hair, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So what made you want to stay in Fresno all this time?
Interesting question. A lot of my friends, because of who I was, say, you're here, you're still here, or you came back?
Yeah.
And I say, I never left. Mm. They thought I went on to a big city because of what I was doing and this and that. My sense of family.
Okay.
My sense of family. No success in the world could compare to being able to touch my father or my mom or my brothers. No success would ever outdo that. Never. Never.
Okay.
And being separated as kids, come on now.
Right.
And I'm going to go to L.A. to try to make it big or what? Big to me is being big with my family, being there, being able to do for my family, being successful within myself so that my family could look at me and be proud of me. And that's for me moving up, you know.
So what kind of things does the, what styles do you teach at the studio?
I teach hip-hop dancing, popping. I teach the kids how to pop. I teach locking. In some of the moves, they're not really, especially the locking part, they don't like that. They're not into that. But if you show choreo and you're doing a little bit of it in there or show, then they're cool. They think it's hip-hop.
Yeah.
You know how you sneak that dirt nasty food into the good food? It's like that. It's like that. So they love it. They love it. They really like it. And for me, I had to learn more from that popping into the hip hop.
Okay.
So, but I mean, it was an easy transition because everybody's doing it. So you learn.
Right.
You learn.
Do the kids know the kind of history behind it and kind of the connections to Fresno?
Behind? Popping? No, not really. No, they don't. They don't have an interest in that.
Hmm.
Just say Michael Jackson, and then their ears pop open.
Right.
They listen. Seeing all of that other stuff, kids are not interested in that. I show them. Videos of back, and they're not interested in all that. They don't care about that. They want to see like what's now. What is right now.
Right.
All of that, what happened back then, we don't care. But they don't realize that what did happen right there is happening right now. We already did that.
Right.
What they're doing right now, we already did that.
Right.
We may call it something a little bit different, but it's already been done.
Okay.
It's perpetual, you know.
And so, where do the kids compete now?
They go to Los Angeles to compete, the Bay Area. And sometimes there's competitions here in Fresno, local competitions, different competitions like at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium, at the different theaters here, they will have competitions.
Okay. And what's the name of the studio?
McCoy Hip Hop is my studio.
Random question, kind of going back. Did you ever participate in the West Coast Relays?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I was a runner. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
My understanding is that there were dances afterwards.
Like I said.
Okay.
My daddy was strict, and you're in, better come home when it's done.
Okay.
All that hanging out, going to the party, wasn't happening. But yes, there were big things going on like that. If there was a competition, daddy would always open it up for us to be a part of a competition, but you're bringing your butt home afterwards. Okay. There's no hanging out. And no.
Okay. So the dance is like at the convention center.
Yeah. Yeah. That's no. You ain't even hanging out at the mall.
Right. Okay. Is there anything else you feel like we didn't cover or that you want to talk about?
Gosh, I feel like that we covered a lot. I do like to talk about the word competition. You mentioned that a few minutes ago. I don't have my students do competition. If it's like a local competition, cool, go. But I don't, at my studio, I don't promote that within my studio. Like I told you, my focus is to build confidence and self-esteem. Once you have that, you can go out and win anything you want to win.
Right.
So that's what my focus is at McCoy Hip Hop, is to build the confidence, make a connection with that child, to communicate with that child so that they're getting along better at home with their mama, their dad, their brothers and sisters at school. Like I'll catch them talking. I said, wait. You're talking during the time I'm talking to you. So that means that when you're in English class and the teacher's explaining, you're doing the same thing. And then they start putting the two and two together and they're like, you know? So that's my whole approach to my being.
Was your foster family, were they African-American as well?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you said that was from, like, kindergarten age?
Yes. Right? So that had to be from, like, 1965 to when I was about 12 or 13.
Okay.
So that was, what, 70-something?
78-ish.
72, wait, something. 65. Yeah. So that was, yeah. So that's what, 8 years from kindergarten to eighth grade?
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah.
Did you keep in touch with them?
I did keep in touch, sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of. It was a very hurtful time of my life. Mm. So, but again, as a child, you see things a certain way. And when you become an adult, you understand why things were done and said. But, you know, it's different. It's a whole different thing. So.
Were you guys together, the siblings?
No.
Okay.
We were, at first, we were separated, all in different foster care. About 3 years into my foster care, my baby brother and one of my older brothers, the one that did karate, came to live with me.
Okay.
And then within that year's time, the older brother was moved out of the home because he was older and he had attitude. He was hard to... handle. Yeah. So he moved out and went to a different foster home.
Okay. But so then when you guys moved with your dad, that's all of you?
Yeah, we all moved back, except I had three brothers that were then older, so they were on their own. But there was four of us, me and three of my brothers that lived with my father.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Anything in conclusion?
I'd just like to thank you, guys. I mean, like I said, we live this. You don't see it as history or this and that. We live it.
Right.
But you were looking from the outside in to what this was as a culture, as a as life, as entertainment. You're looking at it, and that's because sometimes you don't realize what you're doing.
Right.
You don't realize it. As in my business, when I work with kids, I don't realize what I'm doing, because what I did today means nothing tomorrow. I start all over. I start all over. No one knows who you are. What you did yesterday means diddly. What are you doing today? So I never look back at what I did until someone brings it to my attention. And then I, you know, it emotionally kills me, because I don't think about that. I know what's right. I know. So I'm very passionate about what I do.
Great. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I think we can get some of this scanned, if you don't mind.
Yeah, this one, that one. And I, before I realized that you wanted pictures, I said, oh, gosh, I got to go through and, and get these. But I can print these out for you if you.
We can probably scan it from there. I think Ken has the other one, has the puppet pictures.
He might have
photos.
Yeah.
I don't think we have that one. So I think we might be able to just scan it from the phone. If not,
maybe
you can
fine.
Email it to us, and then we
can. Okay, that'll be fine.
Because eventually it's going to be digital anyway. So if you have that, you can just email it to
me. Oh, okay, that's fine. I'll do that.
Yeah. I'll add that. But I know Ken had the other one, the puppets. He had both of you.
Mm-hmm.
So we can scan that.
Mm-hmm.
Was this like you just cut this out for?
You know what? This was probably on a board on one of our advertisement things. And I'm a person that keeps everything. I have everything. I have pictures from, because to me, holding on to my life, even now for me to throw something away, I'm like, I have issues. I don't want to throw it away. I want to hang on to it. I lost so much, you know, that I can't throw.
Yeah.
I'm working, dealing with that. So, but I have everything, and I know I have more pictures, but when I realized that you guys were looking for pictures, I'm like, and I was on my way here. I'm digging for what I had in my phone, and I knew where this one was.
Well, we're hoping this will keep on going. So, yeah, there's no time limit.
Great.
So if you come up with things, or if you want us to come out, we can come out.
Okay, great. You're welcome to come and check out my studio.
Yeah.
My kids, like, this is my Instagram. Hang on, let me show you this. This is my Instagram. And these are some. We got to perform with Mr. Fab. It was phenomenal.
Nice.
He came to Fresno. But this is.
Okay. Wow.
And she's about 11 years old. She's been with me for about 5 years.
Okay.
4 or 5 years. I take them back to the older music. You know, we go all the way back.
Who's doing the choreography? All right. Where are you looking?
I have a studio at Manchester Center.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what part of Fresno is that considered?
Central.
Okay.
Central Fresno.
So again, it's pretty diverse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I these kids learn, look at this one. She's only like 6 years old.
Six?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So my students, we're always in the newspaper, on TV. People are always filming my kids.
Okay.
This one, I have to show you this last one, because this one was, this one again, she's about six, and she's about eight, this one.
Wow. A lot of body control for that.
Mm-hmm. She was just, we just did a thing for Fresno City College. It was called Loud. They did an event called Loud. It was schools, not prisons.
I was there.
You were there?
I was there towards the end.
Oh, wow. Yes. I was, we were there. We performed there. And then we performed when Mr. Fab came.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We performed he saw my students and he says, I want them on stage when I perform. We killed it.
Nice.
Yeah. It was really nice. Yeah. So we get called for a lot of the community events we perform. I teach these kids, this is where you live.
Right.
Build this. Right. Forget about LA. Don't worry about that. You worry about what can you do in your own community.
Have you talked to Fashawn at all?
Yes. I just saw him. Matter of fact, we're on here with him. My students took the pictures. Where is it? Let me see.
Was it because he came out of foster care? Today.
Yes. We have pictures on here with him because when he came to Fresno, him and Mr. Fab. Mr. Fab loved my kids, and he talked to my kids. It was amazing, the words he gave them. This was, here he is with my students. That's Fashawn and my kids, some of my students.
That's cool.
And then we did the performance with that was after the fact, the Mr. Fab. Okay, here it is. This is the Mr. Fab performance. And those are my boys on the stage. Please. Come on, dude.
That's always interesting. I never associated Mr. Fab as kind of being, I thought he was kind of a little more commercial. And
okay, so the story was is that when he was there. I didn't know who he was.
Okay.
And my nephew told me, there's a guy back there and he's doing it. Make sure you get pictures of the kids with them. I'm like, who is he?
Right.
And Mr. Fab, okay. So because I had the passes and we were performers, we get to go back to the green room. So I'm back there and we go back there and I could smell marijuana back there. So I'm like, okay, dang it, I don't want the kids to smell this. So I went over there real quick and I told the kids, I said, well, we got to do this right now. They're going to have to smell it. They're going to have to, you know. So I told the kids, I said, when we go out this door, you go right down, go immediately and meet him.
Yeah.
We walked up to him. He turned around. He stopped talking to somebody and turned around and started talking to my kids. I mean, I recorded the whole interview.
Wow.
The whole interview with him and the kids. It was amazing.
That's great.
And then he said after the interview, he asked them to come on stage with him.
Okay.
It was amazing. It was beautiful. This one won't play, but this was actually them dancing on stage with him. It's being stubborn, but it's one of those things.
Okay.
But yeah.
Awesome. Well,
do you have a business card or any?
I don't. I'm not going to give you my information.
Okay, that's great. Do you have anything? Or I could just do it right here.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just add you into my contacts. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.